This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world's leader in robotic-assisted surgery.
This is Laura Dierda, an editor-in-chief at Becker's Healthcare, and I'm thrilled today to visit with Rod Hochman, president and CEO of Renton, Washington-based Providence. Rod is a remarkable leader in person. We will be discussing five quick questions today. Rod, first off, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Rod Hochman. I'm also a physician, headed up Providence over the last 8 years. And I think it's been 42 years since I graduated medical school. And it's relevant that I trained as an immunologist rheumatologist. So never had I thought that was going to be relevant as we're going through this crisis. But I think what's relevant about our health system that covers seven states out west and 51 hospitals and 120,000 caregivers are we have the distinction of having had the first COVID-19 patient in the United States. Now, back on January 21st in Snohomish County, just north of Seattle.
Fascinating. And so with the first COVID-19 patient in the U.S. being within your health system, how were you able to mobilize your team and rapidly change your priorities in response to the pandemic?
Well, what was, for us, having the first really helped us. It was a patient that understood that they had traveled to China, so actually gave us a warning that they were coming in, so that the whole team was ready. They were all gowned, gloved, ready to go, put the patient into isolation, and really learned a lot from that experience. And the thing that it did for us as a health system is it was the alarm bell going off that this was not going to be the last COVID-19 patient that we were going to see. So we really mobilized our whole system, started to get organized according to how we were going to deal with supplies. What are the clinical protocols? How do we share information across our seven states? How do we get geared up for what was next? And it really enabled us to get out in front of what we knew was going to be a problem that we're going to see. And I remember talking to a number of folks around the country about the need for PPE and testing, and they were all kind of nodding their heads. And I said, and as we've seen this roll across the country, all of those questions about testing and PPE got very, very relevant for folks. So I'd say for us, it really gave us an early warning signal to get going. And then for the state, particularly in the Northwest, we started social distancing really early. So it's really paid off now as we're on the down end of the curve, really seeing a substantial improvement in the clinical situation.
Got it. And throughout this whole process, could you describe one or two of the most difficult decisions that you've had to make as your team responds to COVID-19?
Well, I think the biggest decisions that we have to make are, the folks that we worry about most are the caregivers. And they're on the front lines. And I think the thing that's been hardest, and I think if you talk to 100 heads of hospitals and systems around the country, you'll get the same answer. That we feel that we don't have enough equipment to take care of our caregivers adequately. And I think you'd hear that from almost universally, followed pretty quickly by if we had adequate testing, we could also help understand who's sick and who's not sick. Remembering when we initially started, we were waiting 5 or 6 days to get an answer whether someone was COVID-19 positive or not. So those are the things that are really on our mind that have been hardest to deal with. And it's putting your caregivers in harm's way without the most adequate protection that they should have. And that's, to me, first and foremost, the most major issue that we've been facing.
Absolutely. I know that's among the most important things, as you said, across the country. And now, looking ahead, what do you see as being some of your priorities? How are they changing over the next 12 to 18 months as you continue to respond to the pandemic?
Well, the way we think about what it means for the health system is, what does it mean for us tomorrow? What does it mean for us next week? And then what does it mean for us 6 months from now? The longer period out there are two aspects to it. And I think all of our listeners would agree with this. Healthcare will never be the same ever 6 months from now. So like on Friday, we did 13,000 virtual visits in one day. And we're really changing the way we practice, what we look at, and how we do healthcare. So that's going to be a lot that we're going to have to deal with as we go forward. How to deal with COVID-19 until we have a vaccine. We probably won't have a vaccine until the end of the year or first quarter of 21. So how do we get back online, take care of people, and at the same time start to try to get the country going while we still have the threat of the coronavirus out there? One of the things that we've been spending a lot of time is talking to our colleagues in China and Korea to understand what they have done, to understand their lessons learned. How do we start to get things moving? So that's going to be the conversation that we're going to have over the next 6 months, or how do you safely get people back to work? Where do you have enough testing? How do you do tracing? And how do you do that in a way that doesn't give us the proverbial second wave that we've heard people talk about? So that's going to be the real issues. And I probably have had five conversations this morning with different people from the government, from the feds, from state government to kind of figure out what's the best way to do this.
Absolutely. And through those conversations, is there any action steps that you have planned, or is it still very much kind of forming your strategy and what you need to do next?
So a lot of it's still in formation, but it clearly is going to revolve around being able to test people in the population two ways. One, to see whether people are COVID positive. So if you wanted to bring, let's say, an office back to work, if you could test everyone before they came back to the office, that's going to make a real difference before you can put them back to work. So rapid testing, particularly with quick turnaround in 15 or 20 minutes, is going to be essential to have that, you know, very, very widely distributed. The other thing that we're looking a lot and talking to a lot of folks, particularly in Asia, is about antibody testing. And what antibody testing tells us is that whether you've had an relatively asymptomatic case of COVID-19, and whether you have antibodies that we think make you immune to getting the infection again or in another circumstance. And we think that testing is also going to be essential in terms of knowing who's been exposed, who hasn't, so that people safely can come back into a work environment and not have to worry about getting sick while they're at work.
I see. That makes a lot of sense. The next question here is, what advice do you have for other executives to effectively lead their teams during this time, especially when looking at emergency response and really being a strong leader to make sure everybody is doing the best they can to support patients with the coronavirus?
So I think all of us who have read Stanley McChrystal's Team of Teams, if you put that to work, you know, we're in seven states. We've got 120,000 people, 51 hospitals, over 1,000 clinics. The only way you get that organized is really to set up different teams that are working on different aspects, from supply chain to clinical to everything from, you know, how do we pay people? How do we, you know, what an HR policy should we have? So we did that very early on. And every morning at 7:30, we have over 400 people on a Teams telephone call discussing every aspect of what you're doing. So my advice is to do this successfully, you've got to set all of that up. You've got to delegate responsibility to different people so that they can get things done without having to ask everyone else what to do and how to do it. And that's made the difference for us as a complex health system with as big as we are, understanding what our priority needs are depending on which community we're in. Really has helped us go through all of this. We have our finance teams figuring out how we're going to pay for what we're doing and working with the government to understand what we're going to get paid for and what we're not going to get paid for. So as many of our colleagues have around the country, getting organized early, setting up the teams in each of the areas, and really allowing them to do their work, and then to have some mechanism to report that all back to the group The other essential element is absolute transparency. You've got to be honest with the people that are out there taking care of patients about what your infection rates are, what you're doing, what steps you're taking, what are you doing to get equipment in place. All of those things have really made this work incredibly well for us as a health system.
That's fantastic. And then my final question here, what is your message to the frontline workers at Providence at this time?
The message is, and I can say this as a clinician, that I think the one thing coming out of this crisis is that I think the public has again awakened to how much they love and need caregivers, particularly their nurses, their technicians, their doctors, their hospitals, and their clinics. For a long time, we felt like people really were underestimating how important we are to everything we do. And I would highlight the courage of the frontline people that we have. And that includes the people who are cleaning the rooms, serving the food, and making sure that everything's ready in our hospitals and clinics, but also the people that are out in the community, the first responders, and the folks that are keeping the grocery stores open so that people could get food. Those are the real heroes here. And for us in the front office, we're here to serve those people that are doing the hard work on the front lines and making sure that we're doing everything we can to support them. So we want them to know how much we care for them. We try to say that all the time, but actions speak louder than words. We got to make sure we get them the right people, the right equipment at the right time. And as we tell our folks, we're scouring the globe 24/7 to make sure we have the right equipment and the right things for our people. And the messages that we want to send to them is that we're there to support them 24/7.
Thank you so much, Rod, for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This podcast was brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world leader in robotic-assisted surgery.